Brian Neville, good to see you and hear you again. Appreciate the opportunity for you to take time out of your busy schedule regarding yet another acquisition in the wealth management space. I mean, it is insane what has happened over the last number of years and accelerating. And here we have another one, LPL buying Commonwealth. LPL's had a reasonable track record over the past of buying large firms, most recently Atria, Waddell and Reed, and what is next? And so it'd be very interesting to hear from you about the what advisors should look out for in this new contract. They're going from a boutique, very culture-rich firm to what is the largest, we call it a wirehouse of independents. And so, if you can provide some guidance of what to look out for, really appreciate it. We also have some added questions for that.
Thanks, Roger. Always a pleasure. Yeah, I mean, this is 2025, and the consolidation and mergers in the industry are continuing. And one of the things I've said in my kind of 30 years in this industry is the devil's in the details. You got to dig into the actual agreements. You can't look at the headlines. You can't look at the press releases. You actually have to read the actual agreements. And so here, I can't give specific legal advice as you and I have discussed through the years, but financial advisors in the independent space and obviously Commonwealth, as you had indicated, was a strong culturally institution that had a kind of loyal group of advisors, and now you're being acquired by the behemoth in LPL, which is now $2 trillion in AUM. I think a lot of the advisors that went to Commonwealth are kind of going for something very different. And so they have to evaluate a lot of different things. A lot of those are kind of business related culture. But the ones that I like to focus on, and I think you want to focus on with me here today, are what do the legal agreements say, right? There's a retention package. Retention packages have a lot of fine print, and sometimes the fine print is the devil in the details that we like to look at in these transactions. Typically, I say to any financial advisor, send those to me. I'm the one that's paid to be paranoid. I'm the one that looks at the details that might actually contradict what the press release says. And in a lot of these agreements, there'll be a lot of similarities, right? Like the concept of the transferability of the book is there, but you need to dig a little bit deeper. Is there, again, I haven't reviewed any of these, but I've seen press stories out there that say there will be a non-solicit in the agreement for a certain period of time. And you see those with retention packages, but in the independent space, that's kind of contrary to the business model. So you need to dig in and see, is that non-solicit tied to the repayment of money, which is something that an advisor may agree to take on? Like, hey, I'll take this money because if I stay and live out the term of it, I might as well get that economic benefit. But what if it's not what you want and you're halfway through that term and there's a non-solicit and it's tied to something beyond repaying the retention package? That could make your book a lot less transferable than you thought. And are there things in there that would restrict things like data transferability or your ability to continue with vendors? One of the things that I have seen through the years is, some of the size and scope of some of these independent practices. It used to be one FA would spin off with a sales assistant. Now you sometimes have five, six producers, five, six juniors, significant support staff, and you could have literally hundreds, if not thousands, of hours of having input client data into a vendor. And then there's a limitation on the vendor transferability buried into one of these documents. And you think your book is transferable, and your book is transferable, except now you got to spend thousands of hours recreating that data or getting into a fight as to whether or not the vendor transferability, so your right to contract with a vendor that you've been comfortable with. And then on top of that, you'd have to train your team to work with a new vendor. So, there's a lot of the devil in the detail in these agreements that you'd want someone that actually understands the enforceability of them to review for you.
Right, it sounds benign, right? That they sign the agreement, they get 50 basis points, maybe less, maybe a little bit more. an easy transfer of client data, which is negative consents. They're told that they're able to have the culture and the platform and the name of Commonwealth for at least a year. But the facts are is that they're changing custodians from Fidelity, NFS to LPL. And as they transfer that data, it's likely that you've seen in the past, Brian, it being clunky. But you also add to that is the vendors, whether or not it's their CRMs, like Redtail, not being able to use certain, Advisor 360 or Community Link, like many of these advisors are used to. So at the moment, it's like, okay, sign on, but and it sounds easy, but what is reality in a year from today?
I think you just hit on a lot of the issues, and I think clunky is probably a charitable word. If you look at all the good folks at Re First Republic, when they got, quote unquote, rescued by JP Morgan, and you look at the, three tranche transferability of client accounts to the JP Morgan platform, there's not a single advisor that you could talk to there that will t say that that was clunky would be charitable, many times over. And in the independent space, when you're talking about folks, in particular clients, who got very used to, logging in through a Fidelity app and using the Fidelity credit card and using the Fidelity banking thing, switching to a clearing firm can be as disruptive, more disruptive than the advisor changing firms, right? Because if the advisor here changes to a firm that stays with Fidelity, the continuity there will be easier than if they stay with Commonwealth and stick with the clearing firm. And I think a lot of the things that day to day, not only the advisors, but their support staff deal with are things like required minimum distributions, transfers, automatic transfers to bank accounts, all types of things that become significantly difficult in one of these transitions. But
And
digging deep, let me just dig deeper on one topic, Roger. Like
sure.
data transferability. So let's if you had used Redtail, if you had used a contact management system that you had had for years, and now say LPL, there's some restriction on doing so, and it could be benign. They might have had a bad experience with that vendor and decide to say we're not going to use it. That's the type of thing that you need to dig down here and look at. Can you maintain indefinitely your relationship with that vendor if you sign this retention package? And what if you're into it for a year and a half and you just make a decision that it's not for you? Or what if you want to sell your book to someone that is at a firm that needs that vendor, and there's a veto clause in the agreement? So it's a lot to think about.
So Commonwealth and firms like it have a tremendous amount of community support, and good, they're able to get right in touch with their compliance officer right easily or whatever issues and concerns that they have. LPL being now 30,000, and again, we're all due respect of LPL. It's a phenomenal organization, right? Like it's 30,000 for a good reason, but in the end, they are the most powerful, independent broker dealer in the nation, but they're in the business to make money. And so the expectation of support and is going to be probably challenging. But also in the contract, there's nothing that bars the cost associated with doing business with the firm, right? And the payouts that these advisors, Commonwealth, are getting, right, in the low 90s to mid 90s and some in high 90s, there's nothing in the contract that should read their payout should be stuck or held.
Yeah, again, I haven't reviewed that, but I would advise the advisor that this is the time to do so, right? So oftentimes our conversations, Roger, that you and I have is when is an opportune time for an advisor to look at the agreements and compare it to what's in the marketplace? So they should be not only comparing the economics, they should be comparing the contractual protections of the marketplace. So there's many firms out there in the independent space that have contractual protections that might be greater for the advisors than those of LPL. And you know, that is the marketplace. That doesn't mean, to your point, that LPLs aren't fine and that many people aren't going to decide to stay, and they wouldn't have 30,000 advisors if they weren't competitive on a lot of issues. But this is a prime time for an advisor to take a fine-tooth comb, look at the new agreements and see if it jives with what they want for their future, and compare it to the marketplace. And between the economics, which you guys handle, and the legal side review, which we handle, advisors would be well advised to do both.
They're also being told that that if they change the Commonwealth name, that in the contract, whatever they get paid as a retention, they could, if they change the name of Commonwealth from Commonwealth to LPL, they can take their note, they can take their money and leave the firm. How realistic is that? Maybe there is language in there, but the devil's in the details regarding what are the consequences to doing that.
Yeah, well, there's a few things there. One of which is, I think we've probably all read the same press stories that say that this was in a memo. And a memo from a firm is not a contractually guaranteed protection. You need to read the contract. And then, you know, anytime there's a retention package where there's a promissory note and it has avenues for either forgiveness or a bonus payment, there's tax ramifications. And if those are accelerated because of a name change, it could become a taxable event in a year that the advisor doesn't want it. So you need to take those things into consideration also. So if there is a name change and if LPL lives up to what they've indicated and an advisor leaves and it accelerates the payments either through forgiveness or a related bonus payment, it becomes a lump sum payment taxable in that year, which is something the advisor needs to consider.
Excellent, Brian. Really appreciate the dialogue. This is, again, yet another large transaction, and the net of it is that advisors, buyer beware, right? And look at the contract, particularly when you're dealing with very, very large bureaucratic organizations like LPL, in due respect. So they can reach out to you, Brian Neville, at Lex Neville and Intellisano. That's an added name to the firm. Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
Or you can reach out to me, Roger Gershman, at the Gershman Group. My number is 415-265-4029. Brian, again, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you. Have a great day.
All right, thanks.